From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Chevron is the first major U.S. oil company to announce that it will track and report on the carbon content of its products, and it has been waging a large operation to portray itself as an environmentally minded corporation. But environmental and human rights activists continue to target Chevron. Protests occurred yesterday at the annual shareholders meeting in San Ramon, where demonstrators were especially targeting the oil giant for what they claim is the $27 billion liability Chevron is presently at risk for in Ecuador for alleged pollution of the Amazon. That's a case that goes back to Texaco's role in Ecuador before it was purchased by Chevron in 2001. Shareholders voted down a number of resolutions yesterday, including one for a human rights policy and ones for targets to cut greenhouse gases and for the investigation of environmental hazards in the development of Canada's oil sands. In this opening hour, we turn our attention for the first half hour to ongoing controversies involving Chevron, and we invited representatives of Chevron to be with us. They declined. But here with us in studio is Antonio Yuhas, who is policy analyst and author, in fact, lead author and editor of The True Cost of Chevron, an alternative annual report, and also author of the book The Tyranny of Oil. The pamphlet that I mentioned, which I'm looking at, the alternative report, The True Cost of Chevron, Dave O'Reilly, the CEO of Chevron, said belongs in the trash can, but I have a copy of it here before me. Antonio, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have David R. Baker with us, who's staff writer with the San Francisco Chronicle, who's been covering the story. Good morning, David Baker.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And David Baker, give us a picture of what went on yesterday.
Well, it was actually fairly typical for a Chevron annual meeting at this point. Their annual shareholder meetings have for a number of years turned into sort of targets for protests for the various groups that are challenging them on a number of fronts. Some years they hold the meetings here in San Ramon. Some years they hold it in Houston. But it always ends up with some of the same result. This year had a number of very civil but tense conversations between David O'Reilly, the CEO of the company, and various activists who challenged him inside the meeting. And again, that's fairly common. Last year, they actually had a really interesting exchange between O'Reilly and Larry Bowoto, one of the Nigerians who sued Chevron in federal court here in San Francisco and eventually lost that case. But yeah, yesterday was more of that. They keep a fairly civil tone inside the meetings, but it's pretty tense.
There was about a couple dozen demonstrators, roughly?
Well, several hundred outside. Yeah.
Were there that many? Because the report outside. I saw this morning. And inside there were a couple of dozen.
Inside, they don't really take the form of protesting inside. They basically file up to a series of microphones, like anybody at a shareholder meeting. And they take turns for 3 minutes basically asking questions, and O'Reilly sometimes answers them.
I mean, basically, the Associated Press reporter who was outside throughout the period of the protests reported accurately several hundred. A Reuters reporter who didn't come outside reported that there were a couple dozen. So it helps to go out and see the protest with your own eyes.
Thank you for that clarity, because there was some confusion on this.
Yeah.
And there's a good deal of confusion about what is being protested here. Your report is global. It's stuff that's going on in Burma, in Iraq, in Nigeria. A lot of emphasis recently, though, certainly outrage about Ecuador. I mean, that's where a good deal of focus is, isn't it?
Well, first of all, what our report attempted to do was to fill the inaccuracies and misinformation that Chevron's own annual report has consistently put out. And what we did was reach out to tell as many of the accurate stories as we could from the ground of the true cost, as is the title of our report, of Chevron's operations. Now, one of the biggest and most costliest true costs of Chevron's operations is Ecuador. And it is the court that is now predicting in Ecuador that Chevron's full liability will be over $27 billion for cleanup costs and health costs for the ongoing abuses originally perpetrated by Texaco in the Amazonian jungle. And there continues to be a great deal of attention on that case. But what we also sought to show, and the other people who were inside the meeting, it was unique in there were also more Chevron-affected communities present within the meeting than there have ever been before, those including the mayor of Richmond, Gail McLaughlin, also representatives from the Philippines, from Kazakhstan, from Burma, from Nigeria, from Alberta, from all across the world. And then outside, there were even more affected communities presented. And the idea being that what has happened in Ecuador is extreme, but it is not atypical of Chevron's operations. And the potential cost of those operations to shareholders is also not atypical because the rest of the communities are following the path of those in Ecuador, organizing together, exposing the costs, and seeking to hold Chevron to account.
You see this as indicative, then, of what's going on in other local communities, although
that's right.
A lot of the concern over support of the military regime in Burma, for example, it stands out in a very different way. Now, what we're hearing from Chevron is specifically where Ecuador is concerned. And as I said, we invited them to come on this morning and they declined, although they have been speaking to the press pretty regularly. Maybe now that the shareholder meeting is over, they don't see as much importance in speaking out. But let me read the statement that they sent us. "We will not dignify this deliberately misleading propaganda masquerading as a report with a point-by-point rebuttal of its numerous errors and falsehoods. The people behind it are American trial lawyers who are waging a defamatory campaign against us. It's all a part of a baseless lawsuit in Ecuador that seeks to take money from the 401k plans and pension funds of hardworking people who are the major investors in our company. The scheme exploits the real problems faced by the people of Ecuador, problems that are the result of ongoing environmental mismanagement of the state-owned oil company, not Texaco's operations decades ago." And we should mention that Texaco did spend hundreds of millions of dollars on cleanup. And of course, for the most part, Chevron's pointing the finger at Petroecuador, which is a state-owned operation. They're saying, we're not complicit in this. This is trial lawyers trying to shake down money.
Well, so much to confront in that brief statement. The first thing is to separate the report from Ecuador. The report, which Chevron refuses to discuss any of the issues within the report, that Chevron is trying to pass it off as saying this is something that's only about Ecuador, and we have a line about Ecuador, and that's the line that we're going to keep pursuing, refuses to talk about the issues right here at home in Richmond.
Your report they have refused to address.
Which is what they're referring to as the report in their statement. They refused to address any of the substantive issues. Instead, in the meeting, David O'Reilly talked continually about his personal feelings of insult being brought up, the personal impact of these things on him, as opposed to a substantive rebuttal of the issues. Now, in Ecuador, there are a number of misrepresentations in that statement, probably the most important of which is that the case is focusing on the crimes that Texaco committed that were then had to have been picked up by Chevron when Chevron purchased Texaco in 2001 and Chevron entered into an ongoing
lawsuit. They were legally liable. Yeah.
That began in 1993 yeah. that Chevron is now party to. And what Chevron is claiming is that it doesn't have to abide by the ruling of the Ecuadorian judge. And essentially what happens in Ecuador stays in Ecuador, even though it was Texaco and then Chevron's decision to move the case to Ecuador so that it could make this statement. It was Chevron's repeated claim that the Ecuadorian court would be an appropriate place to hear the case, and that in that transition, it agreed to abide by the jurisdiction and the ruling of the Ecuadorian court. And that court has found that Texaco and now Chevron is liable for causing cancer, for toxic spills, for gross environmental abuse, and that the full accounting of those costs is upwards past $27 billion.
Let me get David Baker here on this since he's been covering it as well. President Correa, the president of Ecuador, has gone on record saying Chevron has gone on record saying that the president of Ecuador has all but called for the verdict against them, that the trial process was compromised. I mean, there are all kinds of charges flying here. That is from Chevron, countercharges. They say that essentially they were I just want to make sure not only that there's a shakedown by trial lawyers, and the trial lawyers, U.S. trial lawyers, will get the bulk of this $27 billion if indeed the money goes to them. But there's been fabricated evidence and gross manipulation of the country's judicial system. I mean, what kind of substance do we have in terms of these charges?
Well, I mean, it depends on which charge you want to go into. I mean, the weeds on this thing are incredibly deep. As far as the president's statements, President Correa's statements, they are the kind of things that, you know, if President Obama said that about an ongoing lawsuit in the U.S., it certainly would raise a lot of eyebrows. I haven't seen any statement that he's made, Korea has made, basically saying, I want this case to be decided in this manner. But he has said a lot of things that walk right up to that line. There's a really interesting documentary film that about this case that was at the San Francisco Film Festival a couple of weeks ago called Crude by Joe Berlinger. And there's a scene in that where he follows President Correa around while he's touring the oil fields. And while he doesn't basically say, yes, Texaco is guilty, he basically just repeats a lot of the arguments that the plaintiff lawyers have been making in the case. So as I say, if an American president did that, yeah, that would be quite a big source of controversy. In terms of the contamination, the testing, and all of that.
By the way, Chevron has said publicly, James Craig, who mm-hmm. is their main lawyer, has said there is no evidence or proof of contamination or widespread contamination.
He's
on record as saying that.
Yeah. You're probably going to get into what he's defining as contamination. I mean,
exactly.
Let me be absolutely clear on this. I have not gone down there and toured those fields myself. If you look, however, at the footage from the people who have, if you look at the footage of the court officials going around and inspecting these fields, there's a lot of contamination. I mean, what you and I would consider contamination, open pools of oil and water mixed, there is a lot of that. And in some of their statements, Chevron says that.
And that's where Antonio, for example, says this is only indicative of what's going on elsewhere. I mean, contamination of water in Nigeria and so forth.
Yeah.
Local communities. Yeah.
With Chevron, when they do say, yes, there is a mess down there, they basically say it's a mess, but it's the responsibility of Petroecuador. We signed an agreement with the government back in the 90s to clean up this number of pits. We did exactly what we said we were going to do, and we're out. Everything else is the government's responsibility. So in the trial, what the plaintiffs are trying to say is that agreement basically doesn't hold water, that Texaco set up the operations down there, and that because Texaco set up the way those operations work, even if Petroecuador is still spilling, it's because the thing was set up wrong in the first place, and therefore the liability remains with Texaco. That's the argument that they make.
I want to hear some more from you on this, Antonio Yuhas. But before I do, I want to also give out the phone number. We only have a half hour with our guests. We're going to be shifting gears after the break. So if you have something you'd like to weigh in on here, question or comment or something in the way of observation, by all means, join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your calls. It's 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free, and you can join us now, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, and our email address is simply forum@kqed.org. Talking to David Baker of the San Francisco Chronicle and Antonio Yuhas, who is lead author and editor of The True Cost of Chevron, an alternative annual report. Is that available, by the way? Listeners may indeed want to avail
themselves. Absolutely. We have an amazing website, truecostofchevron.com, which not only has the report but has our inhumane energy ads, which are showing the hypocrisy of Chevron's human energy ads. And these are beautiful ads that people can also download and make use of themselves.
I'm surprised
right
you're
off
.com
the
and not .org, by the way.
I'm not sure.
let me ask you another good question. Yeah. I hope it's a good question. Are the trial lawyers the ones who are the main beneficiaries of this Ecuador case?
No, absolutely not. And let me just say, first of all, what we did in this report was to collect the best experts on each of these issues. So in our report, you hear from the experts on the Ecuador case. And those include the activists at Amazon Watch who helped compile the piece within the report on Ecuador. What we have in this case is an enormous amount of misinformation. The beneficiaries of the case are the indigenous communities in Ecuador, whose lives and livelihoods have been destroyed.
In fact, a pair of them were given the Goldman Award, the Goldman Environmental Award.
Exactly,
this year.
Yeah. Exactly. And they were at the meeting again this year to make their case again to David O'Reilly and the shareholders. And the case to the shareholders, which is very, very clear cut, is that Chevron has been providing misinformation on the case, most importantly, downplaying its potential liability in this case. And again, that is typical of the company's response to the ongoing threats on its operations. Nigeria is another wonderful example of that.
We ought to mention also that according to your report, there were 100,000 tons of toxic waste dumped by Chevron in the year 2007. That's 100,000 tons, and less than 3% of their budget goes into alternative energy exploration. They've also pretty much refused steadfastly to offer better reporting on greenhouse gas emissions, and so you have all of these things sort of in contradistinction to this role or image of wanting to be a serious corporate citizen or wanting to do the right thing. But as I think David Baker put it appropriately, there are many weeds in this whole assessment. Let me get our callers in here, and we'll go first to Sacramento. Christopher, join us. You're on.
Hello. Great conversation. In the light of if the judgment's even passed against them, how much are they likely to pay, given that ExxonMobil still hasn't paid any money to the people of Valdez, Alaska, for the big oil spill back in the 80s up there?
You want to wager a guess on this, David Baker?
No, I do not want to place bets on that. The company has grown very pessimistic about the trial over the last year and a half or so, and they've already broadcast very loudly that they will appeal any negative verdict against them. They'll go through whatever legal avenues that they have available. The plaintiff's lawyers are very well aware of that, and they very much would like to push the company into settling because that would basically just short-circuit all the appeals. But you know, I spoke with Chevron's top lawyer last week. So far, they're giving absolutely no indication that they're willing to do that.
Well, if they settle, it suggests that they would have to arrange for similar kind of legal settlements in the Philippines, in Cameroon, and Chad. I mean, if, as Antonia says, this is characteristic of global behavior or misbehavior, then, I mean, admittedly, it goes back to Texaco, but you've got a precedent and a very bad one from their perspective.
Exactly. And I think that's why they've been fighting this tooth and nail, even though they were not the original operators there. I think that's exactly why they're taking it as seriously as they do.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go to more of your calls. In fact, let's go to Oakland. Jeff, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks. Good morning, Michael, and good morning, Antonia, and thank you for all your great work. I just want to say regarding greenwashing and the ad and marketing and publicity campaign is something that I think myself and particularly a lot of other Bay Area listeners, I say Bay Area with reference, of course, to Richmond, find very offensive that every day if people watch the Laird NewsHour, the new ADM, Arthur Daniels Midland, has been switched to Chevron with this 30-second piece telling us it's not a liberal or a conservative issue, blah, 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 on how wonderful environmentally they are using a voice like that of Hal the Computer from 2001. And also more locally on KQED every Monday night on It's Your World, Jane Wales announces It's Your World, brought to you by Chevron. Well, there's sort of tongue-in-cheek possibilities in that. But particularly for the Laird NewsHour, I would think that like Bill Moyers, perhaps they could look to foundational support, but not the most offensive thing, which we have to go be put through every day. So I hope that PBS and KQED viewers and listeners will take this into account.
All right, Jeff, I thank you for your call. I guess that's a statement editorially. We'll let stand. We'll go to another call here. Bonnie, morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Great show. I'd like to know what we as citizens can do to counteract the kind of publicity that Chevron is putting out there about how wonderful it is with the environment.
Antonia Juhas?
I'd say the first is to get the information, which is the whole reason why we wrote this report. But the other is then to support the local communities that are having to fight the impacts of these, the consequences of Chevron's operations every day. So local communities across Richmond, Mississippi, Utah, New York, New Jersey, Florida. These are all laid out in the report, the local groups that are struggling against Chevron's operations. And then add on to that the Philippines, Kazakhstan, Burma, Chad, Angola, Nigeria, Cameroon, and reach out and support those communities. The other is to directly challenge the company to write David O'Reilly, to write the shareholders, to write the employees, to write the management, and to say, we've seen the true cost of your operations. What are you going to do to clean up those operations? Then to reach out to your local elected officials and say, we've seen that Chevron is acting in complete noncompliance to clean energy, to clean air standards in Richmond. What are you doing about that? To our Congress representatives and senators, to reach out to the federal government. There's no end to the organizing you can do to hold this company and other companies like it to account.
And other companies are like it, one might add. By the way, in the interest of transparency, we are acknowledging that Chevron is a supporter of KQED Public Radio. So apropos of Jeff's call, there it is out there transparently. You know, the annual profit of Chevron is the second highest profit-making corporation in the United States. And back in 2008 was their most profitable year in history. However, I'm looking at the Financial Times. It says Chevron's overall finances have taken a hit in recent months as the price of oil and natural gas plunged. Chevron's net income in the first quarter fell 64% to $1.84 billion, while sales fell 45% to $36.1 billion. Do you think that maybe in addition to that, some of what has been of concern here has perhaps diminished
their profits? It's certainly been reported throughout the financial press that Chevron's financials are suffering because of the public relations that the company is suffering, and that the liability of the Ecuador case in particular is a drag on Chevron's financial prosperity. Hopefully,
just lawyers' fees alone.
Lawyers' fees alone would have to. Yeah. Hopefully, it affects consumer attitudes. But just to say on the flip side, for those of us who are organizing against Chevron, to be aware of the fact that its share value has gone up, and also that there is a lot of talk still in Chevron about continuing its merger process. So, you know, Chevron is a result of many, many mega mergers, most recently that of Unocal, and there's still lots of whispers that Chevron's in the market to buy somebody else and to buy somebody big, and that if we don't want this company to continue to get larger and be more difficult to organize against, that's something else for us to keep our eyes out for.
We're coming up on our break here, and as I said, we're going to shift gears and talk about the Ignition Project at Lawrence Livermore in the second half hour. But David Baker, could you say something about Chevron's ongoing role locally here over in Contra Costa County in Richmond? Is there mounting protests and greater numbers or what?
Well, actually, I do want to address something that Antonio was just saying. I personally don't think that the controversies around the company are affecting its financials yet. Their financials are dictated largely by the price they can get for oil and the price they can get for gas. It could end up affecting the share price as it goes forward. And you've seen some financial analysts saying that in their research lately, saying that if the company doesn't deal more effectively with these things, it could take a hit on the stock price. But right now, the thing that's really driving that is the oil market, and their fortunes will rise or fall with that.
We've come to the time where we have to say goodbye to both of you. Thank you both for being here. Antonio Juhas, David Baker, I'm Michael Krasny.